Hey folks, this is Walt, and on behalf of the BAM podcast, a ringing phone and probably a barking dog later, this is the Indie Creators Spotlight. Today we have two luminaries in the indie comic scene that we just have to talk to because Drexler, the preview issue from the Kickstarter, dropped from Mr. Nathan Kelly. How are you, sir?
Hey, how you doing?
Undercaffeinated and riding shotgun in a spaceship full of dreams and napkins written full of ideas is Mr. Bob Sally. How are you, sir?
Doing all right. Thanks for having us on.
Thank you guys for coming on. I really appreciate it. So we're talking a whole bunch of indie comics today, and Bob, we've had you on before, and you know, we basically know your secret identity secrets. Let's dive into Mr. Nathan Kelly. The only thing we really need to know, Nathan, is spinner rack or comic book shop when you were a kid?
Comic book shop when I was a kid, yeah.
So never walked into a 7-Eleven to buy a hot dog and a comic?
You know, no, but I do remember going into the commissary on base and looking for comics. Kind of the same thing, I guess. Just if you're in the Army, I guess, or in the military, you might know what I'm talking about.
Right on. So how did you get into comics? Did you just stumble into a comic shop one day when you were younger, or did you happen to see a movie or maybe those bad 70s Spider-Man shows?
Honestly, I'm not exactly sure. I remember getting a Spider-Man comic for my mom when I was really, really young, and just loving it. I read that thing every day, or at least look at it. I don't know if I was even old enough to read at the time. And then I would say during middle school years, around the time that I think Image Comics had just launched, is when I really started getting into it. And I remember buying, you know, Spawn and Danger Girl and The Darkness and Witchblade and all those books, and I kind of, you know, would sit there and try and draw the characters, or actually copy the poses but make them my own characters type deal, and it just kind of, you know, grew from there.
Were you a kid when you started to draw, or did you come through that later in life?
No, it was around that same time. I was young. I always liked to sketch, but I didn't really, I guess, take it seriously until a few years ago, really right while I was in the midst of going to college or finishing up my degree, was when I started, I guess, you know, just drawing and taking it serious. And I'm thinking I was maybe good enough to actually, you know, try and make a go at it somewhat professionally. So here we are now. And that was, what, I don't know, 2011, 12 time frame.
Right on. Now, you started getting drawing. You started sketching. Now, when we look at Drexler and the other book that that we've seen from you, because I was a backer on the Kickstarter, we see Snarl. You got a very distinctive style. It's like half cartoon, but it's got that cel-shaded quality, but at the same time, it's visceral. How did you start developing that style, or was it just, it's just that's what the hand wanted?
No, it's entirely intentional. As an artist, I mean, in my younger years, what I would draw, I would copy other people's stuff, and you're trying to find, I guess, your own style out of that. And it was really when I started reading Mike Mignola's Hellboy and 100 Bullets when Eduardo Risso was drawing that it clicked, and I would see that, and I was like, dude, I want to draw just like that. And I studied all their stuff, studied everything, any material that was out there I can get my hands on. I studied it all, and that's kind of like where this style is born from. It was just that those two artists in particular are my artistic muses. So that's kind of what I emulate when I draw.
When you're drawing, and you have those scenes where you can use shadows like Mignola, or you can use like those intense visceral moments like in 100 Bullets, Do you have a process that you go through for when you're plotting out a scene, like knowing what's going to go where, or do you really trust in your writer to kind of bring that across, and that's how you start putting things together?
I look at the script and I just start doodling, just throwing ideas down. The lighting and everything, you know, as I'm sketching it out, I'll kind of block out where I think I'm gonna, you know, shade each picture. The beautiful thing is, you know, when I started doing Snarl, about halfway through that book is when I discovered, you know, the digital medium, which is very forgiving. So a lot of my stuff is very trial and error. I can go in there and I could shade, you know, a panel one way, and if I don't like it, it's easy to just, you know, do a new layer and start over again. So in that regard, that's kind of like my process. It's just, I just, you know, I have a kind of basic idea from the beginning, and I just tinker with it until I'm happy.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So let's start diving into some of these stories you're talking about. Now, Snarl, was that your first book?
Yes. Until Drexler just came out, that is the only book that I've ever done. But yeah, that was my first one.
And how did you decide to work on that one? How did you fall into it?
That one was a co-creation with Kelly Bender, and I'd actually been working with him on a few projects, or at least one other project prior to that, that just never panned out. And then I kind of came up with this idea to do a detective story, and kind of like this, how this project came together with Bob. I had an idea and I started to draw it, but you know, I suck at writing, so I asked Kelly, like, hey, can you help me out? And that's kind of where that evolved. And it's almost the exact same story on Drexler, where I had a story in mind. I actually wrote a script. I actually had almost half the issue drawn. And then, you know, talked to Bob about it. And basically we scrapped everything because it was garbage and started.
It wasn't garbage. It was just we were fine tuning it, and then Nathan just said to me, "Do you want to just rewrite it?" And so I was like, "Yeah, I mean, I got nothing better to do." It's been this was discussed ages ago. It feels like now. Like I was just actually thinking about that because I mean, UPS just pulled up in my driveway, and I'm actually holding issue one of Drexler in my hand right now. And I always say to my wife, I'm like, you know, no matter how many comics I do, the moment that like you open up a box and you hold something that you've been working your ass off on, it's got to be like that feeling of like a child, you know, like you love them all. And it's because of the work you put into it. And I remember being, you know, at my office, which I'm long since passed. Like, I'm out of there now. But I remember, like, being in the office and Nathan and I, you know, again, he wanted to talk on the phone. And before we started recording, we were talking about how much I hate talking on the phone. So I'm in the office and I'm like, I don't have any time. I mean, I could text my ass off in here, but I don't have any time to actually sit down and talk on the phone. And I just remember sitting in like this small little conference room, the first time I ever talked to him, and we just started going over stuff. And I read Snarl, and I knew Nathan from Facebook, and I've seen the work that he did, and I love the uniqueness of it. You know, I liked that Mignola of it, but it still had its own uniqueness to it. And I know when he asked me if I would do it, I mean, I'm a comic book creator, I'm a writer, like I'll never turn anybody down. He said, he was like, well, how much do you want? And I'm like, I'm just gonna do this one for free. I was like, because you might read it and hate it, so I don't want you to pay me anything. I just like, let's just do this because we both want to tell the story. I liked his idea of Drexler, and he kind of gave me, you know, a little bit of freedom to kind of do some stuff. But it was also a very cool thing for me because I've never worked on somebody else's project. You know, there's times like that I would send something to Nathan and, you know, he would reject it, or he would say like, let's try to do this. And instead of me fighting, there was times like I will fight them on it, to be like, no, we have to do this because it's going to make sense. But then there's other times where I'm like, you know what, this is his thing, you know, so I'm going to do the best that I can to bring his idea to life, his vision to life. So it was a very, very cool process. But I mean, to go back, I mean, what he was doing was very interesting, and I think that as a writer, I was just trying to give him some guidelines to, you know, how the process is. And fortunately enough, he thought enough of me to ask me to write the whole thing, and people seemed to be liking it. So I guess we did a good job, Nathan.
Yeah, the feedback has been tremendous on it. So yeah, we hope to keep the momentum going on the second one. And this one was a blast to work on, and I'm totally happy that Bob agreed to write it. And
one of the easy things as a writer, at least from the way I approached this, was because it's Nathan's vision, I didn't really have to, you know, the script was very loose. You know, I don't know, would you agree, Nathan? I mean, there was parts maybe where I was specific, but because it was his vision, I left it very open to like, hey, like whatever you vision the town to be like, you know, where if I'm working on one of my visions, I would have to say to an artist, like the town needs to be like this. There needs to be this, this, and this. But this was his vision. So I was like, whatever town that you're envisioning, that's where we are right now. So it kind of gave me a little more, it was more lax for me to write the script. And if it was faster for me to write the script, because I didn't have to go into detail, because the vision of the town was already in his mind. So I didn't have to explain anything to him about that.
Yeah. The script was great. And it was really, really open to interpretation, on a lot of things, which is good, actually. You know, there'd be times where it was a little bit, maybe a little too loose, and I'd come back and be like, all right, what do you mean by this? Or give me a little bit more information. But, you know, the process overall, it's been smooth sailing. It's been fantastic. I think we've kind of gelled creatively on this project. And, yeah, it's been a blast.
So when you guys got together and started going through the paces, was it a smooth transition? Like, I know you said, Bob, that, you know, there was initially some pull going in and out. How do you start a collaboration like this? Because a lot of people who listen to this who might want to start a collaboration up or start their own comic with another person, how does that gel?
I would consider this a collaboration, but again, this was Nathan's vision. This is Nathan's idea that he gave me the information that he wanted to, you know, he gave me the character information. He gave me, you know, the time and place. And then I was able to say, okay, well, this is how we're going to tell it. You know, it wasn't both of us going through saying like, okay, this character Trexler, he's going to be like this. So I don't think that there really was that much fighting or, you know, that much back and forth. You know, whatever Nathan wanted was what he was going to get. And I think that for a first, like our first time working together, I'm just so proud of what we came up with, you know, because I think we're both very like-minded people too. You know, there was no ego going into this book. You know, there was nothing that I wanted to put in there that if he said no, that I was getting bent out of shape with. So, I mean, it was just a really easy process, talking about an easy process between working together. You know, I've very much enjoyed working on this with him, and I'm looking forward to continuing to work with Nathan. He's a great artist, and, you know, he's just getting better and better. I mean, you know, Snarl's a great book. If you hold these two together, you can see that his talent is blossoming. So it's nice to be a part of, you know, somebody who's up and coming and watching them, you know, just, you know, growing in the industry.
Yeah, it's been great. I got no complaints. It's, you know, Bob's been writing a brilliant story, and I'm enjoying, you know, illustrating it and, you know, collaborating and putting this all together.
I think what like one of the best parts about this is, you know, if I'm working on Salvagers or if I'm working on Shelter Division, that's my idea, and I have a very specific view of what I want it to look like. But with this, the way I'm writing it, it's more my goal is to more do the storytelling, and knowing that this is Nathan's thing, so he's going to really bring out the art. He's going to bring out the visuals. And what's great is I'm writing it, and when he sends me pages, I have no idea what – and I guess it's going to be very hard for anybody to really understand this unless they actually do the act of writing and producing comic books. When you're writing a comic book that is yours and you have a very specific idea, when that art comes back, you're very critical of it because you're like, this is – you know, this is – off, or this is that, or I want this fixed. But when I'm writing this with Nathan, it's his vision, so I'm writing the story. So when he comes back and he sends me a page, I have no idea what it's going to look like. You know, I just know how the story's going to be told. So when he comes back, it's really it's like me seeing it for the first time, and it's beautiful to see. It's like turning that page and seeing something that shocks you. And hopefully for Nathan, when he gets the pages or the outlines that I send him, likewise, he's kind of like, hey, you know, you're the one writing it, and I have no idea what I'm going to get. Hopefully I like it. Hopefully you like it. But for him, it's almost like he's reading the script for, like, he's reading a comic for the first time.
Yeah.
So it's actually, this has been one of the more, I would say, less pleasurable. It's one of the more, I don't want to say stress-free, but writing it, it's very enjoyable because it's, you know, there's so much pressure not on me because I'm not so fixated on how things are to be. I leave that to Nathan because, you know, it's his baby.
You know, it's funny he mentions that because it is a surprise. You know, when he sends his script, it's really loose. And there might be a little bit of dialogue in there, but it's not until the actual finished pages come back where I'm actually kind of reading, you know, verbatim, word for word, what the characters are actually saying. I have an idea in my mind and some of the, you know, what he's written down to give me an idea of, but I don't have the verbatim dialogue. And I don't even think Bob has it dialed in. He gets the pages back and fills in the blanks. So it is. It's kind of like you know, Christmas with each page that I'm looking at and reading for the first time, and it's been amazing. Honestly, there hasn't been a page that I've seen when Bob put his dialogue in that I was like, well, I don't know about that. It reads and flows amazingly. So yeah, it's been smooth sailing and I'm pretty sure that trend will continue.
Yeah,
right on.
Could only get better.
Absolutely. So for people who are curious, because, you know, we've been talking about the process that you guys have been going through, can you give us a Cliff Notes version of what Drexler is all about? I mean, those of us that have backed the Kickstarter and have the Drexler issue number one preview, we've gotten to take a look at it in all its glory. I had one friend who was also a backer, and he was really enthusiastic. He's like, hey, did you see all the gardening in this issue? And I said, what are you talking about? And he said, oh, there's some really nice trimmed bushes. And I was like, what? So then I got to read it the other night, and it's just been a funny joke. But as far as the story goes, very intense. There are several properties on TV and in media where I would compare this to what you have going on, but would choose your version a little bit better, because I think a big part of the first issue for what I read was somebody trying to come to terms with old relationships, and that really hit me in right in a soft and squishy spot. So can you give us like a Cliff Notes version of what Drexler, the first issue, is about?
I'll let you go, Nathan.
You know, that's a big part of it. You know, it's about this guy. kind of been abandoned and by his hometown for events that have yet to be unfolded, and they'll be coming up in the next issues. And, you know, he's coming back because of the one connection that he has to his prior life, which is his half-sister, because she needs him. And so he's coming to come back, and it's kind of like reopening old wounds, reliving some of his terrible experiences, and he's just there to support her. And,
do what he does best. Take care of problems. He's a problem solver.
I mean, in a nutshell, I think that's what it is.
We don't want to give too much away, but when you read issue one, you'll see that there's that the town is has a problem that they realize that they don't have the means to take care of, so they call in the one man who was banished to take care of it, almost like, you know, let's bring in a monster to take care of a monster.
Yeah, there was a lot in that first issue. The beginning of the issue was what dragged me into it. And like you said, Bob, you don't want to give too much away, but he might be part of a, you know, group that handles stuff. And, you know, I won't say any more than that, but I mean, very fun approach to that kind of take. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Is that me? Oh, go ahead.
Oh no, I'm sorry. I didn't catch that. About,
oh, it's anybody really. In the beginning of the issue, you find out that he's part of a group that handles problems, and I'm air quoting.
Oh, right.
So like, but it was a really interesting take because throughout the Kickstarter and throughout the we're getting these images of the cover and stuff like that, and I had it in my head of what kind of monsters this guy might handle, be they, you know, mankind or strange kind, and it wasn't what I thought of at all. And can you guys talk about like that, like twisting a premise like that to kind of fit your narrative?
I'll let Bob touch on that one first.
when we were doing this, you know, Nathan told me, you know, this was set in a world like, you know, an Earth where aliens are just as much as part of this society as people are. And, you know, the way I like to do my writing is I don't like to just blatantly throw it out there. I like to hint, unpeel the onion. But yeah, Drexler works for a company that, you know, kind of like a mercenary type for hire company that they go out there and they do jobs that nobody would really want to do. And, it's kind of dealing with the aspects of aliens living on this planet and doing what they need to do to survive and cope and, make their way in a strange place that isn't really their home, and bringing also different technology with them that, you know, we can adapt to, we can fine tune, we can kind of, you know, make, we can look and replicate ourselves. As you can see in issue one, Drexler can teleport. So as the series goes on, you know, these are things that are going to come to light, and Drexler is going to, you know, he's going to have a few people that, you know, that aren't really friendly with him and that want to see him go down. So he's going to have a lot of things going on. It's not going to be an easy time for him to do what he needs to do to help this little town. I apologize if I seem vague. It's just that there's with this issue one, there's so much. I feel like when issue two comes out, we could talk way more because there's going to be a lot of things that are in issue one that are going to kind of blow up in issue two, and you're going to see more of that. You're going to learn more of it. But Drexler's a badass, and he doesn't apologize for anything.
Hopefully by the time... I'm sorry. Go ahead, Nathan.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say that hopefully by the time issue 2 comes out, I'll have this whole Skype thing handled and we'll have it much more smooth so we can have a great conversation about this. Nathan, what were you going to say?
No, I was just saying, after Bob just described a little bit of issue 2, I just said I can't wait to get started and get drawing on it, man. I'm amped, ready to go. Get this thing out there.
So when speaking of, you know, getting projects out there, when are you guys thinking about pushing this forward?
It's coming. It's coming along. Right now, I'm concerned. My primary concern is getting the books out in people's hands that backed it. And we're outlining issue 2 and 3 right now. And as soon as we ironed out all the details, we'll get going, I guess.
So where did you get Drexler's look from? Because he's got one of those iconic looks. You know, you referenced Mignola earlier, and you know, when you see Hellboy on a cover, you automatically know it's Hellboy. Where did you, you know, you got that whole night vision thing going on when you see him, you know, when he's getting into character, so to speak. What how did you come up with that look? Because you know, when you see Drexler and he's got his whole deal going on, you automatically know it's him. So, I mean, kudos for that. You've established an iconic look.
It was, again, trial and error. I guess what I was really inspired or taken with when I was doodling the whole thing out was just the circles for the eyes, right? I was playing off of that. Lobster Johnson, one of Mignola's characters, was kind of like an inspiration for that. That if you match like Lobster Johnson together with Star-Lord from Guardians of the Galaxy, that's kind of where I was drawing my, I guess, my inspirations from. And it wasn't intentional, because at the time when I first was drawing this character, I had no concept of what I was going to do with it. I was just, you know, doodling and came up with this idea. And actually, the first fully drawn and rendered image of the character that I ever did is on the cover of issue 1, the one where he's kind of crouched over and those little centipede things are coming up the rocks or something. That was the very first fully realized image that I drew of him. And then it was when I drawn that, I kind of started thinking like, I might be onto something here, because it looks way better than I anticipated it was going to turn out. So I kind of started brainstorming of what kind of story I could tell with somebody that looked like this, and why would he look like this, and that sort of thing. But my influences has always been, you know, Mike Mignola's Hellboy, and 100 Bullets. So I loved. Those are the two comic books that have kind of been the biggest impact on me as a creator. So wanted to take elements from both, you know, the monsters and shit from Hellboy, and kind of do some crime and stuff from 100 Bullets, and give it somewhat of a sci-fi science fiction spin to make it my own. That's kind of how it all came together, in my mind at least.
I also think you have a really nice feel for the town as well. You get a sense that like when you're reading through the first issue, the town that he left, it feels lived in. Like these people all have a connection to each other. It feels very small town, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, maybe. Is that kind of where you went for that, or am I just reading left of center?
Yeah, honestly, I didn't. My take on the town, at least visually, I just wanted something surrounded by a forest. So it felt really remote. And just kind of like, yeah, just something you would see in like, I don't know, what's a movie that you probably reference? Tremors, or maybe not Tremors, but. Something
Tremors
remote.
Is good.
Yeah, Tremors is good, but that was more desert type feel. And I was
you know, the feeling of it being set off from the rest of the world, though, which I love.
Right. Yeah.
And it's almost, you know, it almost went without saying. We didn't really, I don't know if we really even went into big details about that. You know, and again, it goes back to the, I didn't have to give him a lot of details on what the town looked like because I knew he already had it in his mind. But it works great for all, you know, you take, as a writer, you take the things that somebody wants to do where, you know, Nathan's like, I want this guy to be going back to his hometown, you know. So it's like, okay, well, you know, it's not like he's going to be living in New York City. You know, it's because that's just, it doesn't, it's so big that nothing's personable. So if this guy's going back to a place that he left, that's, there's going to be so many open wounds, like it has to be a small town. Everybody has to know everybody. Everybody has to know your history. You know, so you don't, you never hear of a story about somebody going back to the Bronx, you know, with, you know, history, you know, it's, because it's such a big city, you know, so it has to be a small town, and it works perfectly, especially for somebody where he comes back. I wanted to have that, and I don't know if it's coming across yet, but where on the surface he doesn't care, but you get a sense that on the inside he feels he cares, you know, and he's got that tough exterior, but on the inside he's kind of, he misses this place. This was his home, you know. So he feels not betrayed, but he almost feels like he was wronged. And as the story goes on, you learn why he was exiled, why he was pushed out, and then the reader is going to have to, you know, make their decision on who they're, you know, what they think is right or wrong. And it's one of the things that I always try to do, and I try to get better as a writer is, I want the readers to read the story and kind of make their own choices on who they are. You know, like, do you, there's never any good, absolute good. There's no absolute evil. It's, we make the choices that we make. And I want readers to be able to look at those choices that the characters made, decide who they believe made the right choices, but also it makes them look at themselves and say, you know, what kind of person am I? You know, what side do I stand on?
Yeah, you definitely got that from the story. I mean, I when I saw it, I kind of, the town kind of gave me that vibe, like the Winona Earp town, that in that show, and then Stranger Things. You know, like you were saying, that town that's cut off, but at the same time, it's home for everybody. And everybody knows each other and in each other's business. And you can tell in the story that, you know, Drexler is, he wants to be home and wants to be relieved that he's home, but you can just tell he feels very uncomfortable there.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of like being the popular, you know, you're sitting across from the popular kids table. You want to go there and you want to hang out with those guys, but you know it's going to be a painful experience if you're not part of that clique. Where did the inspiration for some of the townspeople come from? Because you can, you see, you know, when you do see things in media that depicts a small town, you usually get certain archetypes, and some of those you've hit very well, and some of them are atypical. So how did you come up with not only the story of some of these characters that are unfolding, but also the look?
Well, the character, like, Bob is a character writer, so the personalities that you're seeing and reading, that's, you know, kind of his niche. That's what he does best. The look of them, I don't know if there's a great answer. I mean, I knew that McKinney was going to be sort of like an adversary to Drexler when he comes back, so I wanted him to be a little bit, you know, somewhat of a, you know, a type A leader person that and look the part. And his sister, I was just, you know, trying to just doodle something that kind of would stand out. I don't know if there was a good reference or something. I didn't have a specific actor or person that I would think of when I was drawing some of these people. It was kind of just off the top of my head a lot of times. Whereas Drexler, when I was drawing him or creating the way he was going to look outside of his mask, I had a specific actor or person that I would sort of reference, because for the features of how he would look and stuff like that, that I would model that after, if that makes sense. But some of the other characters in the story, just on a whim, I'd sketch something up, and if it felt right, then I'd go with it.
I got to tell you personally, like with Kara and McKinney, I didn't have, when I was writing it, I didn't really have like a specific way that I thought that they would look. But when Nathan sent me the pages, like when you're creating a comic book, the writer and the artist, they're always going back and forth, because the writer's excited to send the script to the artist and have them read it and be like, did you read it? What'd you think? Tell me what you thought. It sucks, doesn't it? Just tell me. I know, I'll rewrite it. Don't worry about it. It sucks. Forget it. I'm going to throw it away. And then it's likewise, when the artist sends something, and usually it's done, I mean, for me at least, it's usually done over Facebook Messenger. And there's the thing, like, where it happens with me on my other titles, working with the artists, where they send you a page of the art, and they can see on Facebook Messenger, you can see when somebody sees it. And, you're so busy during the day. I mean, I'm taking care of two kids. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. And I'll see something, and I'll look at it, and I'll be like, wow, that looks great. And I'll put my phone down. And then, next thing you know, you're at Sky Zone, and you're making dinner, and the artist is like, you hate it. And you're like, oh, shit, I forgot to get back to you. And like, no, I love it. And like, you're like, oh, my God, have you just been sitting around for 5 hours, like, waiting for me to – because you know that I saw it, and I didn't say anything, and it sucks because, even when you see something that you're like, oh, that's awesome, then you put the phone down because you're like, I you don't have time to respond. And usually I always try to take the time to respond to everybody. But I think, like, going back, like, that's like the collaboration part where I'm sending script and I'm excited for him to read it. And I'm like, what do you think? And he's sending pages and he's like, what do you think? So when he sent the pages and I'm looking at these characters, there was never a moment where I looked and I was like, oh, that's not what I expected them to look like. I immediately was like, oh, cool, that's what they look like. And that was refreshing because he just nailed it. When I was writing the part, I didn't really, it's almost like having a kid, and before the kid's born, you're thinking of all these things that you're going to do, and then the kid comes out, and you're like, oh, that's what they look like. You're not thinking, like, I hope they look like this. So it is. Like, he did a great job with everything. And, I just can't say more than enough that how much I'm looking forward to doing the next one.
Right on. So at the end of Drexler, we have a... we have a oh crap moment where everybody's like, what do we do with this? So can we expect issue 2 to pick up right where we left off, or are we
right where you left off?
Oh, we love it. That's the
right where you left off.
If there were right answers to this podcast, that would be one of them. That would be one of them.
Yeah, you're not going to have to wait around. It's going to be right in the midst of it.
Like a perfect James Bond sequel. I love it.
Yeah, there you go.
So while we're waiting for Drexler number 2 to drop, and obviously everybody's always in process. There's never just one project. So earlier you had mentioned that you might have a little something coming up on September 4th, Bob. And I don't know about any of you, but seeing as I might have mentioned that I have everything you've made so far. Go ahead and tell me how my wallet is going to suffer.
Well, hopefully it won't suffer too much. You know, so Salvagers Volume 2 is coming to an end. We're putting out the conclusion of the Recreators. You'll be able to order it on Kickstarter pre-sale September 4th. We're going to have some really cool stuff where you'll be able to get the single issue if you've already been following us, or if you are new to it, you'll be able to get Volumes 1 and 2, and you'll be able to get everything we have. If you are somebody that has Volume 1, but you are waiting and you're holding out because you only like to read trade paperbacks, well, this will be your opportunity to get Salvagers, the Recreators, in its full glory, 96-page trade paperback. And again, we're going to have the pop figures, the custom-made pop figures that we've had. We're going to have some original artwork. And there's going to be some awesome bonus award, bonus stretch goals that we're going to be putting out there too. So September 4th, there's going to be an early bird special for the first 50 backers where they can get it for a little cheaper. So we'll be putting, if you follow me on Facebook, just put in Bob Sally, look for the one that has the soy sauce t-shirt, because you're going to see my dad, you're going to see like some other guy out there who I think is a singer-songwriter, and I'm sure he's a great singer-songwriter, but I am the one comic book writer, Bob Sally. So follow me on there and follow us on Salvager Series. If you just type in Salvager Series, you'll see the little black and white logo. Follow that and you will get information on when this is going to launch. And if you appreciate it and you want to jump on it early. Share it with your friends that are out there that also like sci-fi stuff, because the more we get, the more you'll get. That's one of the things I think that people don't understand about Kickstarters. Is if somebody's doing a Kickstarter right, they are not hoarding all that money. They are putting it toward things to give to you. And the more that we get, again, the more you'll get. So check us out September 4th, Kickstarter. It'll be the conclusion of Salvagers the Recreators, where the pirates have been just decimating the crew.
And could we expect possibly the next story arc to be announced sometime during that Kickstarter?
The next story arc is not going to be announced, and you'll understand why at the end of this, but there will be another one. Just don't worry, there will be a Volume 3, and Volume 3 usually I do everything as single issues. Volume 3 is going to be done as one trade paperback, one graphic novel. It's really like, I'm really excited about it, because the end of the end of the Recreators or Volume 3 is equivalent to the end of Empire Strikes Back. So that's the only thing I'm gonna say is it'll either leave you loving me or really hating me. But that's all I'm going to say about it. I've already said too much.
So that means that since there was a lot to clean up after this mess, the Salvagers will be busy.
The Salvagers will be busy.
Right on.
But we're already writing the Volume 3, and I'm really excited about it, because it just brings everything together.
Right on. Nathan, you got any other spoons in the pot for things coming up, or is Drexler your world right now?
Right now, it's all about Drexler. Unfortunately, as an artist, it's just so time-consuming doing this part-time, or part of a part-time, I should say. So it just takes too long to finish one project, to do on multiple projects, at least for me. It'd just be impossible to finish anything. So, right now Drexler is it. When that's a wrap, then maybe things will open up. Who knows? We'll see.
So, of course, as an artist, you never really just stick to one thing, because there's pencil ADD to contend with. Have you formulated any new projects? Is there anything that you kind of got hovering in the back of your mind, like, oh, I got to get this down on paper so I can take care of this next thing?
There's always ideas. There's always stuff that you want to do. But it's just, do you have time to see it through? And right now, if I got to stay focused on one thing at a time. And since Snarl came out and Drexler is now coming out, there's always people that want to pitch me ideas or ask me to, you know, draw them their new comic. And I really wish I could collaborate with everybody. I really wish I could. But I just, right now, I'm not in a place where I can take on multiple collaborations. So I just got to stay focused on one thing and, you know, pretty much give 100% of effort, maximum effort, and just do the very best I can on this project, and hopefully it'll be a good product, and people will like it, and, you know, still want to work with me or continue doing this, you know, who knows, on the next one. So we'll see.
Hopefully, if we both do our jobs right, by the end of this first Drexler, everybody's going to be like, "When's the next one coming out? When's the next one coming out?" So that's up to both of us to do our job right, right, Nathan?
Yeah, exactly. That's the goal right there. So,
well, that was the whole reason I invited both of you on the show. I wanted to know when the next one was coming out.
No, I mean, I'm not even the next one. Like, for this one, I'm talking about the next chapter, the next trade paperback, the next story arc. Hopefully we can make Drexler kind of be that thing that every year there's a new series, there's a new episode, there's a new story to tell about this character. Because the more I'm doing it, I mean, right now I'm outlining issue 2 of this, and I'm starting to really like this character. I mean, I know it's odd to say that, but it's the first time that I've ever worked on somebody else's IP, and working on this first issue, it was great to kind of map, you know, the characteristics of this guy. But now, the way my process works, you know, I hate to give too much away, but the way my process works is, when I get to a certain point in the story, it's first to build them up, and then it's to tear them down. And, you know, if that gives a little bit away of what's to come for Drexler, you know, it's I always say that the best way to make people love your character is to put them down in the ground and have the audience watch how they pick themselves up.
I'm sure Brigby would absolutely disagree with you.
Well, yeah, probably. But I mean, it's one of the things I always think, like, why Superman is such a flat character. He's such an omnipotent character. And the moments that we've liked him, you know, I always think of him in the pool with, you know, the kryptonite around his neck, you know, back in the Christopher Reeves days. And, but he's just this character that, you know, nothing hurts him. Like, how often is he down? And even now with like Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman, I think they're doing it. But I've been watching, like, reading the comic books, and there's always a simple problem that he, you know, figures out. And but it's the characters like Punisher, you know, that I really love. Those characters like Wolverine, who, you know, even though it's not a physical thing, it's more of an emotional thing for Wolverine, and that's the characters that we connect with, because as people we've lived with down, we've been through shit, and we've had to pick ourselves up. And if we haven't picked ourselves up yet, and if we're in the midst of picking ourselves up, and we're using comic books as a way to kind of, get rid of our outside problems for at least a moment, we connect with those characters the best, because we see that they have the same problems that we have. They have to go through trials and tribulations just like we do. So I really try to always make sure that the characters that I write have those kind of issues that they have to go through. And it's not something that's formulaic. It's something that actually, you know, works with the story, but also tells a little bit about the character.
Now, Nathan, working with Bob side by side on this project, do you feel your writing has increased, seeing how story beats come about and talking about this kind of characterization?
Yeah, I've definitely learned a lot just from working with Bob and seeing his process. And even before this whole came about, we talked almost regularly because it'd be me trying to struggle to figure out how to tell a story, write a story, whatnot. He was very helpful and would guide me on some tips or best practices and things to think about. So I try and soak up all of that. But honestly, right now, I just writing is even when I tried to write the first issue of Drexler, it just doesn't come natural to me because it feels like I just want to skip to the next step and just start drawing. And so sit down and physically write is like it's like pulling teeth and trying to put it all together. So it's great to work with a writer and a really good writer at that. I'm happy.
So your Kickstarter backers got their taste of issue one, and then you were kind enough to include Snarl in that as well. If people wanted to pick this up who didn't have a chance to get it on a Kickstarter and did not realize that everybody should have a giant Drexler fighting tentacles poster on their wall, if they want to get some of that swag, like the issues or posters and stuff like that, do you have a place set up that they can do that?
I'm setting that up now, actually. It'll be on digitally. It'll be available on Comixology shortly. Don't know exactly when. If you've ever submitted something to Comixology, I guess you might have an idea of what I'm talking about, where you're just sort of waiting around to hear when they're going to release it. And then I'm setting something else up with a new website called SpinWiz Comics. And print will be available there on demand and digital as well. I'm waiting really until after I ship out all the physical copies to my backers. I want them to have the first opportunity to hold it in their hands before I make print available for everybody. But yeah, digitally it'll be available on those two sites for sure soon.
So
he couldn't be any more vague than that. For sure. Soon. It's always like, maybe. Yes, definitely maybe. No, it'll be in there. I know Nathan, though. I know he's going to do it. Comixology takes forever. It's one of those processes where they're so backlogged that, it could take 6 months from the time that you apply. Just I know from experience, Drive Through Comics and, all the other places. I think it's just Comixology has the best digital platform. If anybody's ever read, between all the different digital outlets out there, Comixology is a really cool experience because they go panel to panel. They even split panels up. So it's and I had the luxury of actually sitting down with five guys who were programmers with Comixology at New York Comic Con last year, and they said that it's amazing how backlogged they are. So it's going to be out there. Once Nathan lets me know that all the Kickstarter backer reward holders have gotten their stuff, then I think we could start doing some contests for issues of Drexler and some other issues of Snarl and throwing a bunch of stuff in there. But again, I agree with what Nathan's doing. The first and foremost is you want to take care of your Kickstarter backers because they took care of you. So it's a smart move, and I think that they're going to be. I'm looking at the comps that I got, and it's a great, well put together book. And I've read this thing probably hundreds of times because every time you get new pages, you look at it. Yeah, when you're putting the dialogue together, you go over it, and being able to sit down and go through it, I'm just very proud of it. It flows great. Very proud of it, and Nathan, you should be too, and everybody that backed it. Thank you guys so much for putting it all together.
Exactly. Yeah. I want to thank all the backers for coming out, and it is something I'm really proud of, and I'm a little bit jealous that I don't have a copy in my hands right now to look at.
It's only because I live closer to New York than you do.
Yeah. So, I'm still waiting on my stuff, too. But I can't wait to get it out to everybody. And, I hope they enjoy it and want to come back out and support us again on the next one.
So, Bob, if people want to check out your stuff and hopefully be less vague about it, it's just a joke. But if they want to check out your stuff and possibly get caught up before the Kickstarter hits on September 4th, can they do that?
Yeah, you can go to Comixology. If you look up Source Point Press, you can find Salvagers Volume 1. You can find Shelter Division Issue 1. And if you're looking for single issues of Wreck Raiders, which issues 1, 2, and 3 are available now, you can go to dirtyplanet.bigcartel.com and you can order them right there. You can also grab some awesome new t-shirts from Source Point Press if you go to Source Point Press Store Envy. If you go to their Facebook page, Source Point Press, and hit Shop Now, it'll take you in there where you can get, again, you can get the Salvagers Volume 1, you can get the Shelter Division Issue 1. If you go to merchandise, you can go and you can find some t-shirts in there for Salvagers. And it's just the library keeps growing and growing. Also, you can read Jasper Starlight Tavern. If you look that up on Facebook, we have the individual issues of that on there. And just trying to increase the library.
Right on. Now, if people want to stalk you on the internet, Bob, what's the best way to do that?
The best place for me is Facebook. If you, if you put in Bob Sally and you see a moron with a soy sauce t-shirt, that's me. Usually I fluctuate between that 5,000 cap, but you can follow me, you can message me. I'm always accessible on there. I always tell people, when I first started doing this, there was no Facebook, so there wasn't anybody that I could really reach out and talk to. So I always try to make myself accessible to anybody that's looking to ask questions just about the process or what they want to show me. I have a couple scripts that I have to read because people have written one, they want my feedback on it, and I just really try to put myself out there because I didn't have anybody to talk to. I want to kind of give that back, pay it forward. I'm also on Twitter, Bob_Sally, and Instagram, you can find me on Bob_Sally, as well as the Salvagers Instagram, Salvager Series. So if you put in Salvagers or Bob Sally, I'm sure that you'll find me. If you really want to find me, you'll stalk me to the little rural area that I live in and come knock on my door. Don't scare my wife.
Nathan, if people want to stalk you on the internet and check out more art and possibly get their hands on Drexler when we see it go live, where can they do that?
Same thing. You can find me on Facebook. You can type in Nathan Kelly, although you might come up with a lot of people. So if you type in NKelly, NK28, that's my handle on Facebook, on Twitter, and on DeviantArt. You can find me under that handle easily, NKelly, NK28, and you'll come to my geeky Facebook page, which is, if you come to a page and there's a lot of comic book stuff, shark stuff, and basketball stuff, then you're at the right spot. That's me.
So we're going to see basketball playing sharks with comics in the next issue of Drexler?
Oh, who knows? We'll see.
Right on. Well, gentlemen, I just want to say thank you because it's been an absolute pleasure. Nathan, I'm an instant fan with Drexler, and I was very surprised because I'm not usually into procedural comics, but Snarl was kick-ass. I really enjoyed it. So thank you so much for coming on and sharing your time today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thanks for having us, Walt.
Absolutely. And Bob, always a pleasure, sir. We've done this a couple of times and then met in person once. I apologize. I got you the wrong coffee, but
No, it's all right. Don't worry about it. Some people like Starbucks. Some people like Dunkin' Donuts.
Right on, right on. Next time I'll just.
I'm ambidextrous. I can drink them both. if you're around, if you can make it down to Mohegan Sun, I'll be at Terrificon with Source Point Press. So I don't know if you want to come down and put $50 on black. Let's play.
Oh dear, my last convention was 2002.
Oh come on!
Yeah, they scare me. So, but you know,
no, they're fun now.
I don't know. Lots of people crammed into small spaces, but yeah, I'm always down to come down. So you know, you announce it. I'll if it's within. Driving distance of me being able to get back and let my giant German Shepherd out back into the yard, I'll definitely make a run for it. But
awesome.
Once again, Bob, thanks for coming out. Nathan, it's been a pleasure, and I'm glad to have met you. And this has been the Indie Creator Spotlight on the Banff Podcast.